720 WGN. Ben Bradley's laughing because I didn't have my mic on.
What do you do this for a living, Lisa?
Never. Hey, we are at Harry Carey's. Yes, it was the unveiling of the new Route 66 sign this morning. Ben Bradley, I don't know, are you investigating something?
No.
Okay, here for fun?
A lady, I was walking down Navy Pier, and a lady who looks like she would be in management at Navy Pier said, "I know you. Why are you here?" Which is not the warmest of greeting, but once she knew it was for a good reason, she was like, "Welcome to Navy Pier."
Ben Bradley, the voice you know, the face you love, and the best investigative reporter in Chicago from WGN-TV is seated to my right, and seated to his right is the CEO of Harry Carey's, Grant DePorter. And you two go back a ways, right?
We go back a long way, Grant.
I think you were at SEAL TV.
Yeah, so that would have been almost 30 years ago when I first met Grant. And now we go to the same barber.
Yep. Harry Carey started the trend, going to that Frank LaFranza, then you, then me, then Mark Sapelsa, everyone's going.
It's not very far from the WGN Radio studios.
No, it's in the Hyatt.
It's in the Pedway.
But my favorite story about this is, you know, it's been 10 years since I left Channel 7 and went to GN, and after like 2 weeks, the news director at the time, Jen Lyons, comes to me in the newsroom when I got off the air, and she says, "Hey, where are you getting your haircut? Hey, Sapelsa, can you take him to your barber?" And so, in Sapelsa, in his like eager way, goes, "Ben, I got this great guy. He's been cutting hair in Chicago forever. He used to cut Harry Carey's hair, Jack Prickhouse's hair. He does Grant DePorter and my hair." And I said, "Well, Mark, two of the four guys you just named are dead. Like, that's not..." No, he's still up on the trends, Ben. It'll be fine. And anyways, the best storyteller, this guy knows more. He should have a radio show on
You
GN
almost
radio,
said Frank he knows LaFranza. More.
Chicago.
That's classic. Ben forgot because he doesn't have a TV camera in front of him that he's actually on.
Yes.
Actually, he does have a TV camera. You'll see WGN-TV covering this as you have throughout the day. Grant DePorter, tell me about the sign unveiling this morning.
I don't think it could have gotten any better. I mean, I got up at 3, so did a lot of our people at Harry Carey's. We had morning rallies that were just packed and festive and fun. The Plain White Tees, Ryan Dempster, Ron Kittle, Tom Doerr dressed like the Gemini Giant. And we have two Abraham Lincolns here as well.
And I'd love to see him duke it out. Can we get a little match between the Abrahams?
Yes, we could. Cage match. Well, we had alpacas out there, we can find them in Route 66 in Arizona. So we had that. Volo Auto Museum gave us the Batmobile from 1966 plus a bunch of other vintage cars. And then Harley Davidson, Illinois, showed up in force. Big caravan. And I think we had 100 people, 100 Harleys parked in front of Navy Pier.
Because honestly, the people I know that still want to do Route 66 do it on a bike.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful ride. If a little long for me on the back of a bike, but you know, for those that are into it, it works. Kevin Powell is here too.
Yes, Grant. When does the planning start for the toast? Because of all the toasts we've been a part of, every year you think of something creative and fun. Mm-hmm. Do you start planning the next toast like tomorrow? Because we've done so many different cool versions of the toast to Harry Carey.
Well, the Route 66, I've been working on this for 3 years because I knew the 100th anniversary was going to be this year. And Harry grew up on Route 66 and had enough ties to it that I thought that'd be the natural. And then when I found out that, you know, California, they moved the ending point in 2009 to the Santa Monica Pier, you know, the light bulb goes off and said, "Well, I've got to talk to Alderman Brennan Riley and see if we can get city council to do the same in Chicago." He passed a resolution. The state passed a resolution. The mayor put out a statement saying he's very supportive. And then all these commissioners tied to Route 66 also loved it. So peer-to-peer makes a lot of sense for people.
Okay, talk to me about the Harry Carey drinking diaries. You mentioned it briefly on the air. Is it true? And is Ben Bradley in there?
Ben has his own diary.
On the advice of counsel, I will not.
Yeah, so his longtime accountant and lawyer just gave me all these boxes a few years ago and said, "I don't know what's in there, but they're yours." So I opened them up, and there's all these diaries by year. And Harry would write what bar he'd go to and who he was with. So he averaged 6 bars a night every single night for at least a decade. And he would be out right. with, like, Wilt Chamberlain. Oh, I like Wilt so much, you'd go out the next day with Wilt Chamberlain again. And then Ernie Banks and Jack Benny and just all kinds of random people.
And was it just the bars in the diary, or were there other, like, incredible Harry Carey stories? Yeah, like, wow, I looked out into the bleachers during the game, and you would not believe what I saw.
It was just the bars because
just the important stuff.
He thought he could write off his drinks off his taxes because he was like...
Well, there was a moment way back that perhaps you could stretch things.
Yeah, but his accountant never... he didn't tell Harry no, so he just took the diary and put it in a box, and he did not deduct it off the taxes. And after like 15 years of Harry doing this meticulously, the accountant finally fessed up. It's like, I don't know why you're filling these out. You can't write this off your taxes. Oh,
Grant, you mentioned on the air this week that Elvis was a huge Harry Carey fan. I hadn't heard that story before. Elvis was a Harry Carey fan, and he actually reached out to Harry to hang out and have a beer or whatever it might be. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he was calling a college basketball game in Memphis, and Elvis knew that he was there. So the funny part was Elvis called Harry's hotel room and talked for a long time. Now, Harry would talk to everyone, all fans. Harry did not know who he was talking to. And after a long time, Harry goes, well, who is this? And he goes, Elvis Presley, I thought you knew. And it's like Harry wouldn't believe it was Elvis.
Oh,
and then he said, okay, look out your window in 2 minutes. And then Elvis pulls up in front of the hotel. And Harry goes, it might be, it could be, it is, Elvis Presley.
Oh, my goodness.
And then Elvis comes in, and they talk for a bit, and then Harry wanted Elvis to go with him to the basketball game, and Elvis said, I can't do that because it'll be mayhem there. But Elvis picked up Harry after the game and took him to Graceland. And then they ate barbecued ribs and drank and told stories till 4 in the morning.
I love it. So I've got a story, a Harry Carey story, that confirms he would pick up the phone and talk to anyone. So when we were in college... my roommate, Dan, claimed to have Harry Carey's home phone number. Back then, we didn't have cell phones or anything like that. There's no caller ID. And so one night after a couple of Budweisers, we decide, you know what, this Dan doesn't know what he's talking about. There's no way that number is Harry Carey's. So we call him. Hello? And he picks up. Hey, we're two college students at the University of Missouri, and I didn't believe my roommate had your phone number. He's like, oh, why? These kids got to stop calling me.
That is the legend. We are here to celebrate. The toast takes place at 5:30, so get to Harry Carey's on Navy Pier. And Grant, if you look to your right over there, the beautiful blonde, her name is Annie. Today she is 66 years old, and she was here for the dedication of Route 66. Thank you for joining us, Annie. Coming up next, we're going to talk to some of those people who rolled in on their Harleys, and we're appreciative that you're with us either in person or listening on the radio today. Of course, you can call or text 312-981-7200. Mary Vandeveld's back. So happy to hear your voice. It's beautiful here on the pier. 720 WGN, thanks for joining us. Yes, it's the toast to Harry Carey. We're at Harry Carey's on Navy Pier, and there was some debate on whether I was live on the air yakking it up with the two guys to my right, but I guess I wasn't. But look, it's Scott, right? Yeah, push your microphone on. And you represent El Bandido Yankee Tequila. And do you?
I sure do.
Yeah, and you brought me a bottle of the one that I've been wanting to try.
Which is?
Añejo.
It is one of our best expressions.
That's the tequila that stays in the barrel longer, right?
It's in the barrel for a year.
Okay.
Of a year, and it's in an American oak bourbon barrel.
Wonderful. And I was just, they said you got to get closer to the microphone. That's what they're saying about that, Scott. And is it Dave or Dale?
Dave.
Okay, so Dave, we were just talking. I've actually been on the back of my husband's bike for years and done Sturgis and did Daytona, and you guys came rolling up Navy Pier. I'm not sure that they've ever seen this many Harleys rolling up here before.
We were surprised at the amount that showed up because it was 31 degrees this morning.
Oh,
when we left.
But and where'd you ride in from?
So Illinois Harley, I'm the general manager of Illinois Harley Davidson in Countryside on Route 66. So we had a ride start. We were scheduled to leave at 7:30. We didn't leave till about 8:30 because it was just too cold. But we did make it here. They were ready for us. They had flag waivers and everything. We had about 100 people show up this morning. So
you know the requirement to be is you have to do a Harry Carey impersonation.
Oh, man, I don't know if I could do that.
I'm just giving you a hard time. And you fell for it. Scott, can you do Harry Carey? No. Can you?
Holy cow.
Hey, he's giving it a try. So, yeah, this is, I mean, people, once it hit 70, people got out on their bikes.
My cutoff is 50, usually.
Oh, wow.
But that's for most of the people that are actually serious about riding motorcycles. But we were really happy with the turnout we had today. And, you know, we wanted to obviously be here for the new opening of Route 66 here.
Yeah,
so,
it's fantastic.
Super exciting.
Are you ever considering doing the whole route on a bike?
I have done it in a car.
Oh.
But I have not done it on a bike. I would do it on a bike, but most of the time I'm just sending people off on their way. So we're the first Harley store on Route 66, and then the last store is in Santa Monica in California. So most of the encounters that I have with Route 66 are people that are buying a bike and planning on going for their, you know, ride down Route 66. So it's an honor that I have there.
So for those people in four-wheelers that, you know, are annoyed by people on bikes, and there are people like that, one of the things, they're so loud. Tell everybody why you make your Harley loud.
Well, one, because it's cool.
But two,
so we want you to know we're there.
Right.
That's right.
You have
That's
to right. be aware of what is around you. And I'll tell you, the people that I ride with are, you know, all farmers, and they all have all those toys. But I know there's this image, and people think like we're taking over the road or something, and they kind of stereotype us along with the kids on crotch rockets who are on 290 doing wheelies in rush hour traffic. That's not what Harleys are about, right?
No.
Not at all.
There are some of us.
I know. There's a few that think they can do a bagger and pull a tire.
Correct.
Up on it. Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's just about, you know, the feeling of being on a motorcycle, right, is what it is for most people, is that that feeling that you're completely in control and you can't think of anything else besides what you're doing right there and then.
Well, that was the spirit of Route 66, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, long before you and I were born, that's what people were doing. It was the freedom to roll down the windows and go from one point to the other point.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I would say it's a lifestyle, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know, for some people it's a full-on lifestyle. For other people it's just a weekend ride, you know, on a big recliner.
We like them all.
Yeah, I know. That's what's cool. Harley Davidson dealerships welcome everybody, and there's never any judgment, which is nice.
Correct.
Unless you pull up on something other than a Harley.
Well, we'll take you. We'll try to convert you.
So, Scott, tell me, because every time I talk about El Bandito, I've got Chelios on or something like that. So tell me where you guys are now, because the brand just launched how many years ago?
Well, the brand launched in 2020, but we don't really consider 2020 a good year.
No, not at all.
It was hard to sell a new brand into a bar when they had no patrons. So basically, 21 was our first full year. Now we're in about 25 states. We did about 25,000 cases last year, and we're looking to do about 60 this year.
And people can find it everywhere? Almost.
Online.
Okay.
www.elbandito.com is a good way, or if they are a member of Sip Tequila, which is another website, they can order it and have it shipped to their house in 48 hours.
Wonderful. Thank you guys both for stopping by today.
Thank you for having us.
We really appreciate it, and I think the ride home will be a little warmer.
It'll be warmer. If anyone is looking to for a destination to ride, we're doing bike nights last Thursday of every month at Illinois Harley. There'll be 1,000 motorcycles there.
Excellent.
So, please,
countryside.
Yes, ma'am. Route 66.
Route 66, that's all you have to remember, and that's what we're here for today. How many of you guys in the audience were here for the sign were you? Yeah. And Annie, I know you were. Yeah, pretty spectacular, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. Everybody's saying awesome. Grant DePorter throws a party like no one else, and it was wild this morning. You'll see some of that on WGN-TV. And, of course, if you want to see the sign designation, go to our website, WGNradio.com. You'll see it right on the front page. And there's just something special about it. It's the freedom. It's the beginning of it all right here on Navy Pier. Toast is at 5:30. We'd love to see you in person. And Bob Kessler is back at the studio tied to the anchor desk. He has your news next on WGN. This is 720 WGN. It's our toast to Harry Carey. It's also spring break. Navy Pier is crawling with kids. And I don't know if people in the restaurant just noticed, but WGN royalty just walked through the door, people. Say hello to Bob Surratt. He's going to join us in just a little bit. He looks a lot different than he did when he left the station this morning, doesn't he?
We need more Budweiser flowing, Lisa. We need to get the energy going a little bit more here Navy Pier. There we go. There's somebody. There we go. Now we're talking.
I think Pat Tomasulo's on
Pat
the phone.
Pat'll get the energy out.
From WGN-TV. Pat, how are you?
Listen, when you think of high energy, you think of Pat Tomasulo is what you think of.
Yeah, you know, you're not here in person. You're on the phone, but your colleague Ben Bradley certainly made his way down to Navy Pier. What's up with you?
Is the bar open?
The bar is open, yes.
Well, that's why Ben is there.
He did. That did come up. We were talking about Harry Carey's drinking diaries. Before years, Harry would, you know, keep track of every bar he went to and every beer he bought someone with the thought that he could deduct it from his taxes. His accountant always just, isn't that classic?
His accountant that's Ben's MO right there. Is he still there or did he leave?
No, he's gone, I think. I think he's got to go to work. Yeah. Pat Tomasulo, WGN-TV. Hey, what's the deal with Frank Thomas today? Is, you know, suing the White Sox?
Listen, this is those two are never going to see eye to eye. This has been going on, what, 20 years at this point with Frank and the White Sox? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. There are irreconcilable differences between those two that I don't think any of us will ever get to the bottom of.
Pat, Channel 9 posted maybe a week or two ago, but it was old footage of Kenny Williams teeing off pretty much on Frank Thomas. I think you were there. I think you were the reporter getting the audio. Am I correct?
You're damn right. It was my camera. Now, listen, I will, being that it's only the three of us listening to this, right? I'm sure there's nobody on the radio who's going to listen to this at all. I stumbled into that by pure blind luck. We walked in. We were at spring training. God, this was in, what, 2006, I think? Yep. It was after they won in 05. So I think it was 06 or 07. And we walked in, and it was him and, like, two print reporters. And he was going on about Frank Thomas. So we walked in. It was like walking into a conversation that you didn't know that you were supposed to be privy to. Like, we didn't know. So we, like, carefully approached thinking, oh, he's going to stop talking as soon as I put a microphone in his face. But he went up to, like, an 11 when we got there. So he was pretty composed when we walked in. And then when we showed up, he just took it to another level. And that is how that tape came to be. That was us, WGN.
Kenny Williams, Frank Thomas, not the best of friends. Pat, how you feeling about our two teams, Cubs and Sox? Obviously, both in different places right now, but how you feeling about the baseball season?
I feel good about one of them right now. I think they're both where they need to be right now, right? I think the Cubs have done what they needed to do over the offseason to get themselves in contention for a World Series. I don't see a ton of weaknesses on this team. I mean, you know how injuries can hurt a pitching staff, but right now, I think they're pretty good. I think if Palencia can pitch as well as he did in the baseball classic, they'll have their closer too. You know, and I think the Sox are where they need to be in their rebuild. I don't think anybody expects them to go out and win even 80 games this year, but they've got the young talent. Guys are progressing through the minors.
Excuse me. Yesterday, I made the prediction on the air for 74. So don't start stomping down on people who have a little bit of belief in the White Sox. And I'm a Cubs fan.
Well, 70. I don't think 70 wins is crazy. I don't think they're going to win 70 games, but I don't think that's an outlandish prediction. But I think they're both where they're supposed to be.
That's not the Pat Tomasulo. We want the you know, the kid wearing the Husky size in Wisconsin watching these teams on TV. We want the down and dirty. They're going to suck or they're going to be great. What is it, Pat?
Well, I think the Cubs. Listen, I don't think the Sox are going to be very good this year, and I think the Cubs
good.
Will.
Okay.
Listen, when you want to get comedian, Pat, you got to ask him nonsense. When you ask him about sports, then he starts talking like a sports guy.
I derailed the segment by asking
right
Pat about sports.
Pat, or do you want Pat? He's going to start ripping on everybody.
Okay, hey, if people want to see you be funny, it's going to happen right here on Navy Pier on April 25th for the Laugh Your Face Off event. And I know you need sponsors for this event. So you're talking to a bundle of people right now who would like to support you. What are you looking for?
Listen, well, we got tickets that are still available. You get those at laughyourfaceoff.org. But if there's anybody in that room right now who owns a business or just plain old has a lot of money and they're looking to give it to a good cause, I'm your guy. So we're always taking sponsorships. They come with VIP packages for the event, premium seating, some advertising, all that good stuff. We were at Park West for like the last 7 years, and we wanted to move this year because we kept selling the place out in like 6 weeks. So we moved to Navy Pier so we could pack in an extra 200 to 300 people, and we're on our way to doing that. We have some tickets left. $150 for a charity event. I don't know where you're going to pay that little for any kind of gala or anything else in town. So it's awesome. I mean, I'm super excited. We've grown this thing like crazy, and it's an incredible show. It's unlike any other fundraiser in this city. I will die on that hill 9 days out of nine.
I love that. And the proceeds go to the Facial Pain Research Foundation, of course, that not only helps Pat's wife, hopefully through research, but others who are in the same situation. And I just encourage you to go to laughyourfaceoff.org. Thank you so much for joining us. Next time you come, be funny.
Hey, any of those rich people start, like, any of them look interested? Look around the room.
I see people looking in their wallets right now. And the minute you said that, Bob Surratt got up and walked out of the room, and he's the wealthiest guy I know.
Who you got there? Who are we talking about? What kind of big wigs we got there right now?
You got Steve Trout, Ryan Dempster, Andre Dawson, Grant DePorter. You want a party, and it's happening on Navy Pier here. Yeah. He's your guy.
Here's our answer, Pat. All right. Bob Cost is coming up after 3. I'll be sure to hit Bob up on the air for that.
All right. Listen, you guys are my messengers. We got a lot of guys with deep pockets in that room right now. You could sidle over to a few and, you know, feed them a few drinks. Whatever we got to do to get a yes, that's what we're going to do.
We'll get it done for you. And I know you'll be coming back on the show to talk about it in April. So thanks for joining us today.
For sure. Thank you, guys.
Bob Surratt is here. He's going to join us next. Yeah, Surratt on this show. I'm so excited. I think I'll just get up and go take a break and he can take over. This is 720 WGN. We're at Harry Carey's on Navy Pier for the Toast to Harry Carey. Bob Surratt is to my right. My gosh, if anybody has stories about Harry Carey, it's you. Look at the applause. Give it up for Bob Surratt.
I do have one or two, Lisa. Good to be here with you guys. But let me give you a scoop first.
Oh, okay.
We have Tom Ricketts on our show tomorrow morning, a little after 7, and I am going to talk to Tom. You know the weather for tomorrow, right?
It's terrible.
Cubs at 120, all hell breaks loose about 4 with that front moving through. I'm going to get Tom to move the game up to noon.
Perfect.
You can make that happen. Yeah,
I'll take care of that tomorrow.
Andy Mazur said yesterday on your show 9:20, but reasonably noon can be done.
Yeah, that way you get it in before it gets to be 30 degrees and raining.
Yeah, geez, you can just pick up the phone and say, hey, Tom Ricketts, I want you on the show, and he says yes.
So here is my favorite Harry Carey story. I have a few, but back in the day, in the 70s, when I was playing the hits for the kids, and the White Sox were on, Kevin, you remember, Channel 44,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
So I grew up listening to Kevin do the sports, by the way. So Harry, it was teen night where Landecker and I were going to go to the Sox game. So I thought, well, maybe we'll have Harry come on the radio in the afternoon with me first. So it was like a job trade. And you haven't heard anything until you've heard Harry Carey give away Rolling Stones concert tickets to the 15th caller.
That is so much fun. And he seemed to be open to do those types of things, right?
Absolutely. And I still remember he showed me the secret route to drive from the Loop to Sox Park. I remember that. But here's the thing about Harry that a lot of people didn't see. One time when Harry was doing the Cubs games, I was up in the booth freeloading as usual. And Harry had a break between innings, or maybe that's when they had three people in the booth and he did radio and TV, but he had a break. So he walks to the auxiliary booth just to take his break. And I was sitting there with him, and Harry's keeping score. And I forget who they were playing, and somebody from the visiting team was up and had an unusual stance, and they were like moving their arm in a weird way. And so Harry elbows me and he says, hey, look at that. Look at that guy. Look at the way the way he bats and the way he does that. Isn't that odd? And I'm thinking to myself, here's a guy who has seen 83 million games.
Yeah.
He's still as excited about this as somebody going to their first game. And I think that was a side of him not a lot of people saw.
It is, you know, Harry was with the White Sox longer than he was with the Cubs. But everybody, it just feels like you think Harry Carey, you think Cubs. There's the statue outside of Wrigley, and for my generation, I only remember Harry in the Cubs booth at Wrigley. But I don't know how that kind of gets lost a little bit.
Yeah,
Harry
well,
was such a mainstay on the South Side before he finished his career with the Cubs.
Well, he started singing in the seventh inning stretch on the South Side, didn't he?
The WGN call letters, I'm sure, helped too with Harry and the Cubs and all of that and his popularity.
And the cards get lost in all of that, right?
Yeah,
well, you know, I interviewed him many times over the years for various television programs, and the one time he got mad at me, I asked him about the famous story, you know, why did he leave St. Louis?
Oh, I've heard that one.
Is it true? Is it a rumor? Supposedly he was fooling around with somebody he shouldn't have been fooling around with.
Maybe the owner
so
was involved.
So I figure, well, everybody still wonders about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was,
I think it was
the Bush owned the team, right?
Something new maybe with the owner's daughter. I don't know the whole story.
We don't know. We don't know.
And did he get hit by a car?
But I, well, no, that, well,
that
he did, no, that, he did get hit by a car, and that's another story, but anyway, to finish this, so I figured I'll ask Harry about this, you know, I've never heard anybody ask him about it on the air, so I ask him, and Harry, there's a long pause, and Harry looks at me, and he says, Bob Surratt, I'm ashamed of you asking a question like that. And then we just moved on and he forgot about it. But when he got hit by the car in St. Louis, and he was really banged up.
He was.
But he wasn't as banged up and incapacitated as he let on. So he arranged it so he would walk on the field first day back, and he had crutches, but nobody knew he didn't need the crutches anymore. So as he walks to home plate, fans start cheering. He throws away the crutches.
Oh, classic showman.
Yeah,
that is
right.
So great. And how many games do you think you've watched in person at Wrigley?
I mean, I probably grew up in that ballpark. But for the record, I do like going to see Sox games, too, because I'm a baseball fan. I'm a purist. But I, you know what? It used to be that now you talk about going to a game here or there. Well, you know, when we were kids, you talk about it this way. Are you going to this homestand?
Yeah. Oh.
So I can't. I lost count a long time ago.
How are you feeling about this year, Bob, with the Cubs? You got a prediction for us?
Yes, I do have a prediction. You know those last couple of spring training games? How many runs did the Cubs score?
Yeah.
They scored a whole bunch against Milwaukee and against the Yankees.
Yeah, I think they had 8 against the Yankees.
I guarantee you the Cubs will not score more than 2 runs tomorrow.
Okay.
Will that be enough to win?
We hope.
A gem for Matthew Boyden will be all right.
That's great. We're going to be listening tomorrow morning for Tom Ricketts. We all admire what you do, but the fact that you can casually ask really difficult questions, like you knew how Harry Carey was going to react, but you still asked.
That reminds me, far be it from me to tell you how to interview someone, but I know you've got Bob Costas coming up.
Yes, and he's your friend. Thanks
well,
for here, arranging
well,
that.
Well, no, I didn't have anything to do with it, but here is what you ask Bob Costas. Yes, he'll be fine about baseball, and he'll talk your ear off about it, but ask him about his favorite TV show of all time, The Honeymooners.
Okay, all right.
And he will. You can ask him any trivia question
all
about
right.
that program, and not only will he give you the answer, he'll talk for the next half hour about it.
I'm going to spend the news break Googling the most difficult question about the Honeymooners, and I'm going to hit him with it right off the bat.
Tell him I sent you those questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Surratt from WGN. You will hear him again tomorrow morning. It's a pleasure to have him here. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And, of course, there's a Budweiser on the table in honor of Harry. Thanks for joining us. It's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. It's just fantastic on the pier. The sign dedication was this morning. And the very first toast to Harry Carey was hosted by the man seated to my right when he was working at WMVP, right? Lou Kanellis, everybody.
Yeah. How crazy is that?
How many years ago?
Well, I just heard a promo that said 28 years ago.
Yeah, 28 years.
Yeah, 28 years ago. Someone told me 26. It was 28 years ago. Bill Simonson and myself were hosting the huge show on ESPN Radio 1000, WMVP, and we did the first toast here.
Oh, so what an honor
to be back and to be alongside.
And you don't know who's on the phone right now, but ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Bob Costas.
Oh!
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm happy to be part of yet another toast to Harry Carey. I don't know what I can add that you folks haven't said already, but with your permission, I'm going to tell a true story that has a slightly politically incorrect tinge to it and a slightly off-color end to it. Am I allowed?
Bob, if it involves Harry Carey, it's always slightly off-color, little political.
Well, yes, and that was permissible in his case because he was so genuine. You know, some announcers have a shtick, and you can tell it's a shtick. His thing on air was just an amplification of who he actually was every single moment of his life, at least every single waking moment of his life. So when I'm just starting out and doing the game of the week on NBC in the 80s, we'd come into Wrigley Field, all day games at this point, and I'd come up in the booth and say hello to him and Steve Stone on Friday before Tony Kubek and I would do the game on Saturday. And on a few occasions, he said, "Come on, kid, let's go." And so we went up and down Rush Street, made a few stops, and inevitably it ended at Harry Carey's. And it carried on well into the night. And Harry was pounding that Budweiser. I don't know how he did it. I wasn't half his age, and I couldn't keep up with him. And it gets to be around midnight. And the scene is just incredible. You know, people didn't have cell phones then, but people had their little Polaroid cameras, and they want pictures, and some old guy is talking about Cookie Lavigetto or something, or Phil Cavaretto, and pretty young girls want a picture or an autograph from him. And at one point, I turn to him, I say, "Harry, what's it all about?" And he goes, "What's it all about, kid? I'll tell you what it's all about. Booze, broads, baseball, and bullshit."
Did we hit the button on that one? I hope. We'll see if Dan's on his game. Oh, my gosh. I love that. That's very hairy, right?
Words to live by. That's a philosophy. That's a life philosophy. You could change the first part to Budweiser. Budweiser, baseball, and BS.
Yeah. Broads and booze and, yeah, BS.
Right.
Bob Costas with us. Bob Surratt, your friend, was here earlier,
yeah,
and he said that if I wanted you to ramble on for a half hour nonstop, it would be about the Honeymooners. Really?
Well, like a lot of people of my generation, and maybe especially those of us who grew up in New York, the Honeymooners, those 39 episodes from the 1950s, were constantly on. And they were on Channel 11 in New York, which was like WGN in Chicago, and the Channel 11 carried all the Yankee games. So you'd watch the Yankee game, and then when it was over, the Honeymooners would come on. So by the time I'm 10 years old, I'd memorized almost every episode.
That makes me laugh because I said to Bob Surratt, I said, there's no way he's not old enough to be into the Honeymooners. He was too young at that time. Tell me another Harry story. We've got about 2 minutes, and nobody does it better than you. So you're on Rush Street, you're drinking with Harry. There had to be other moments that you remember, and I love those slightly off-color moments, so bring it to me.
This one is not slightly off-color. We did a little mini-documentary sometime in the 90s when Harry Met Baseball, it was called. And among the things we did, most of the interview took place on the diamond at Wrigley Field, but we also took him back to St. Louis and to LaSalle Street, where he grew up. And, you know, he was an orphan and a street kid who listened to the Cardinals on the radio and thought to himself, I can do better than the guy who's doing it now, and sold himself to the Cardinals, where he became their great, great voice. And it was touching. We got to his house, and, you know, Harry didn't wear his – he wore his baseball emotions on his sleeve, but he didn't wear his personal emotions on his sleeve. And I said, Harry, you want to go inside? And he said, yeah, but – you wait here. And he knocked on the door, and whoever lived there opened the door and recognized him, and he went inside. I took it to be for the first time since his childhood or teenage years, and walked around the house that he grew up in, and a house that apparently held not entirely happy memories for him. And then he came back outside, kind of straightened up, and he became Harry Carey again, and we continued walking around the neighborhood.
Wow, that's a beautiful story. Kevin Powell is our sports anchor. He's got a question for you, Bob.
Well, Bob, we got to talk a little bit about the upcoming baseball season. Some changes coming. We've got robot umpires, Bob. Your thoughts on the new automated ball strike system and just how the game has evolved over the past couple of years?
Well, I think all the changes have been good. The pitch clock has been good. The rule about only three pickoffs on the third, if you don't get the guy, it's a balk, and slightly larger bases makes for more stolen base attempts, outlawing shifts, more balls in play. Fans want action, and that's proven to be great, not just for length of games, but pace of games. Now, when it comes to the ABS system, I don't think they're overdoing it. It's three challenges allowed for each team, but if a challenge is successful, then you retain it. And it's only the pitcher, the catcher, and the batter who can call for a challenge. And there's going to be some strategy involved. There's going to be a batter early in the game that's going to want that 0-2 pitch on the corner that comes strike three to be challenged so his at-bat continues. But the manager doesn't want that because it's not a crucial enough situation, and this guy's your number nine hitter, and maybe you want to save it for your cleanup guy with runners on base. So it's going to be interesting to see how strategically it's used, and I think three a game is a reasonable number.
Bob Lucanellis here. I just made the move to NBC, and I couldn't be more excited than to have Bob Costas making the move back into a prominent position on our baseball coverage, which starts on Peacock this week, but actually Sunday Night Baseball will begin at the end of May. It was really, really great to see you as part of the broadcast on the NBA a couple of weeks ago, a couple of Thursdays ago, if I'm not mistaken. Are you excited about getting back in the booth and being such a prominent figure in our baseball coverage on NBC coming up this season?
Yeah, but I'm not going to be in the booth. I'm going to be on the court at the beginning of an NBA game and on the field tomorrow night for the Dodgers home opener and then the subsequent Sunday nights. I'm going to be the pregame host just in the first year. It's kind of passing the baton or passing the mic from one generation to the next. This is the first time baseball has been on big NBC since 2000. So I'm in an emeritus role, and they've been kind enough to bring me back. They reached out to me a few years ago, and I said, wait till we get all the ducks in a row. We're going to get the NBA. Maybe we'll get baseball. We got the 28 Olympics in L.A., and you can be kind of an emeritus contributor to all those things, tie a ribbon around your career, write the proper last chapter, and they've been just great about the whole way we've executed it. So I'll show up here and there, but nothing I do will get in the way of what anybody else would be doing. Everything I do wouldn't be happening at all if I wasn't there. So that's the way it should be. And I'm happy to be back in baseball in the proper fashion at this point, just kind of as an emeritus guy. Historical stuff, the occasional interview, bring the thing on the air. That's my role at this point.
Thank you so much for joining us. And before we let you go, how far do the Cubs go this year?
Well, they lost Tucker, but they got Bregman. The Brewers may still be the class of that division, but the Cubs obviously were a playoff team a year ago. Once you get into the tournament, anything can happen. You know, people think it's inevitable that the high payroll teams, especially the Dodgers, will get there. But the Dodgers were knocked out of the playoffs in 22 and 23 in the divisional round, and they came close in 24 when they won the first of their back-to-back World Series. They came close to losing to the Padres again, once with three wild cards. Once you get into the postseason, almost anything can happen. I think the Cubs have a great chance to get into October.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it, and we'll be watching you on NBC. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Costas. Mary Vandeveld has a chance. Yes, thank you. He mentioned Bill Murray. I didn't know Bill Murray's kid was the coach, one of the assistant coaches of UConn.
He's an assistant there. His son's been couple different stops, but UConn as of late, and you've seen Bill a lot because UConn's been so good.
Yeah,
they're showing Bill Murray in the stands, rooting on his son and the team.
And then Lucanellis, I'm watching him on TV the other night with Brant Miller, and Brant Miller's choosing Purdue to win it all, and I'm like, thank God Lou chose Michigan because that means I made a good choice.
Yes, yes, go Maize and Blue.
Lou, there's that. We were just talking before we came back. There's a clip that gets shared every so often on social media, and it's two icons together at Wrigley. It's Harry Carey interviewing Michael Jordan, which when I see, it's almost surreal. Like the two of the biggest Chicago sports names together at Wrigley, and Harry's talking to Michael Jordan about playing baseball and those sorts of things. But you in the 90s were on the sideline for all of that. One of your first big gigs on TV was covering Michael Jordan and the 90s Bulls. And just before we came back, you were about to tell me a story. You had one-on-one interviews with Jordan after every single game. Like the peak Michael Jordan lose there talking to MJ after games.
You know, people are given that 10 seconds of fame, and I just happen to have 10 years of fame traveling with the greatest show on the court, or as I like to tell people, the Beatles, because I was fortunate enough to travel with the Bulls,
yeah,
along with Tom Doerr, who actually stepped in. So it's so great to reunite with Tom. You know, I'll never forget the story I was sharing, Lisa, with Kevin was, we were in Oak Park, and Tom will remember this. It was during the offseason, so I had done the Bulls on the radio. The first season, the first year, back in 89, when they beat the Lakers in their first championship season, I worked on the radio for the NBA Radio Network. And then after the NBA Radio Network season, that first Bulls championship year, we actually held the rights on WMAQ Radio, 670 AM at that time. Today it's The Score. At that time, it was an all-news station that carried the Bulls. And I did pre-half post and would beg and say, hey, can you guys, Jim Corno and Jim Angio, can you guys give me a shot on TV? And really no one ever would until finally they realized that there were relationships that I had created, that I had built by traveling with the players, and I was given that opportunity to do these locker room interviews. So now I'll go back to that day over the summer where we're all sitting. It's a broadcast crew meeting, and Jim Cornell, bless his soul, he's since passed away, Jim Cornell Sr., Jim Angio, Tom Doerr, Johnny Redkerr, we were all part of this meeting. There were about 10, 12 of us. And Jim Cornell Sr. gets up and says, listen, British Airways has ponied up to do an exclusive one-on-one interview with Michael Jordan after every game. And I was kind of paying attention because I figured, well, they're going to say, you know, yeah, Johnny Red, you're going to do the interview on the court. And Jim Cornell Sr. said, Lou, we'd like you to do the interview. And at that point, my life changed.
Oh.
I knew my life had changed. My career had been taken to another level. Because if I was going to have the opportunity to talk to the greatest of all time, sorry, LeBron lovers, the greatest of all time after every game, you know, at that time, everyone was watching Bulls games. We were doing 18, 19 ratings on Sports Channel, which wasn't even over-the-air TV. It was cable television. It was must-see family TV every time the Bulls played. So it was one of the great moments of my life, one of the great moments of my career. I did the interviews on the court at the United Center. On the road, I would do them outside of the locker room so we weren't disrespectful to the opposition.
Did you ever come across Harry? Or
many that, a times. Yeah. So what many people don't know is my uncle, Nick Claddis, who has since passed away, who Grant DePorter knows well, started Harry Carey's with Harry Carey.
Oh.
And
wow.
My uncle, Nick Claddis, his wife was Mary Claddis, my mom's sister. So Grant's been part of my family forever, and I met Harry a number of times.
Wow.
And would see Harry go into Mr. Kelly's in the Rush Street area, and would be with Harry Carey and Joey Mondelli when Mondelli's at that time was on Clark Street.
Holy smokes.
And became part of the family with Dutchie and Harry and Grant and everyone. So, yeah, I've been part of the Harry Carey family, heck, since for the last 40, 45 years.
So thus, that's the connection to being a restaurateur.
It is. That's where I got bit. I got bit by the bug. And it's, you know, it's only right that Bill Simonson from The Huge Show and I would actually do the inaugural Toast to Harry 28 years ago.
That's so great. I'm so glad you landed at NBC. My God, we could set a channel guide by the way that you have survived and thrived in Chicago media. And it's really great that you joined us today, Lou.
Thank you, Lisa, so much. My wife is so happy that I'm on your show. You are her favorite host, more than her husband.
Oh, my!
All right. And it's just a real honor to be part of this on such a great day because I know Grant put so much into it, and I've seen so many good friends, Alderman Hopkins, my hockey buddy, and Tom Doerr, and Larry Wirt, and Bob Surratt. It's great. Great to be part of today.
Thank you. It's Thank Lou Kanellis, everybody. The news coming up next with Bob Kessler on 720 WGN. It was really great to have Lou Kanellis here, especially since he was here for the very first Toast to Harry Carey. And Tom Doerr is with us. When he saw your face, he lit up.
Well, you know, when Louis came to TV, he'd been on radio, like he said. When he came to TV, we really bonded. I liked his work ethic. I liked how he approached his job every day. And so I pushed him. I gave him any opportunity we could. I love Louis. One of the all-time great people that I've ever worked with.
Well, we love you. We're appreciative that you're here. And he was just making sure that I say Nortlake.
Yeah, exactly. Nortlake. It's not North Lake. Nortlake.
That's where he grew up, born in Elmhurst. And, of course, your time with the Bulls, I'm sure you were listening to what Lou had to say and reminiscing about those moments, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when he talked about the that first meeting with all the brass from the Bulls and from Sports Channel and who was going to do the post-game interview, there was a lot of push for Johnny Kerr to do the interview, right?
I
mean, Johnny and Michael were really tight. But there were a couple of us that really wanted Lou. If I said, if he's my sideline guy, Lou Kanellis is doing the interview. And so that post-game interview with Michael, like he said, changed his life. But only because he was prepared, he worked his tail off, he came in early every day. We never, ever had one problem with Louie.
Preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah, it does.
Lou referenced the 90s Bulls. He said he called them the Beatles. It was like working with the Beatles.
It was.
Because it was that big of a deal. And anybody, I mean, even if you weren't in Chicago, everybody understood the 90s Bulls and the dynasty and how iconic it all was. What was it like for you being a part of that, being around it?
It was everything you'd guess it was. You know, we'd go into a road city, get into Miami at 3:30 in the morning, and there are 3,000 people standing out there.
Wow.
All waiting for autographs and pictures and whatever. And you got to the point where it just didn't faze you anymore. I mean, there are a lot of great stories. Most of them, my wife would kill me if I even started down that road to tell. But
Maybe we'll get one of your brothers over here.
Yeah,
they could tell the stories.
Yeah, they could tell. But hey, listen, this is a toast to Harry, right?
Yes, yes.
There we go.
He's
there
popping a Budweiser.
Cracking up in our first Budweiser,
yeah.
Tom Doerr.
Got you, right?
There we go.
Down the hatch it goes. Cheers.
Hey!
To Harry. And you went to the University of Missouri. Was Harry calling for the Cardinals back then?
Well, you just talked to our radio broadcaster about 5 minutes ago. Bobby Costas was our radio announcer.
Yeah, KMOX.
When I played at Mizzou. So I've known Bobby since 1976.
Okay.
That's when I met Bobby because he was our radio broadcaster. Well, super guy. We're still great friends. I love Bobby.
Oh. Do you have any Harry stories for us?
Harry pulled me aside not long after I got here, and he said, because you never live up to the guy who was before you, right? Never, no matter how good you are. And Harry pulled me aside, and he said, "Kid, don't worry about him." And there were other things added in there. But basically, be you. Don't worry about anybody else. Just be you. And he said, "You're going to be fine." We sat and we had a couple pops, and then he was gone. But I got to sit in the booth. I got to look down on the left side. I saw the famous cooler full of Budweisers, although I don't think it was quite as full by the time I got to the game.
You know, the more toasts we do and the more stories we hear about Harry, the legend of Harry is real. You know, the going out on Rush Street, Budweisers.
Oh.
It's not some made-up story to add to the Harry legacy. It's all true. Harry was out and about, the Budweisers, the beer, all of that.
He loved every part of being with the Cubs. He loved the White Sox. He really had a great time with the Sox. But he loved the Cubs, and he loved Wrigley Field and the Cubs fans. And this is that, to me, that's who he was. He was the ultimate fan. You think some of those years, the Cubs were so bad. I mean, they're 19 games out of first in the middle of July. It's raining. It's cold. It's a nasty day. And all of a sudden, they're going to pull the tarp off. There will be baseball today.
He's most the reason we watched and listened and went to games during those years.
Absolutely.
It is much different now where for a play-by-play announcer, it's almost like some of them hide the fandom a little bit, where it's different, like the Ken Hawk Harrelsons and the Harry. it's so much different now. You don't get that as much in the broadcast booth, where some play-by-play announcers are full-blown homers and totally in on it.
Yeah, and
I understand why, but it's just different from a different era.
You have to understand what your job is, right? You're going to get a job description when you get hired. And when they tell you what they want, you have to listen. So they may want that homer. And if they do, and you want the job, that's your job. Yeah. Generally, they're going to want you to have a little more journalistic responsibility. But basically, your job is, look, I'm with these guys every day.
Yeah.
I get to be friends with these guys, or I don't, right? I mean, there are times when it doesn't work. But for most of the time, these are your buddies. These are guys you're going to see every day. So you get to that point where you're kind of excited, and you also have to understand, just like you all, who you're broadcasting to.
Mm-hmm.
You're broadcasting, in our case, to Bulls fans. They wanted us to be excited. Well, hell, I had Johnny Kerr. I didn't have to worry about being excited. By the way, hang on.
Another swig of the Budweiser. A toast to Harry, so to speak.
Got to. Got to.
And your Harry impersonation?
Oh, no. I'm not. No, no, no. Ryan Dempster is here. If you're talking
yes.
to Ryan, that's the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you still shoot some hoops with your kids, or?
No.
Not at all?
I've had 18-foot surgeries, seven or eight knee surgeries, two knee replacements. My days of shooting hoops are a thing of the past. I enjoy watching great basketball, have fun with some of the NBA games and the college games. I like going to high school games. I can appreciate that. I have fun. But as far as me standing out on the court again or doing anything like that, yeah, no.
Who's winning it all before you go? 16 teams remaining. Who you got?
I like Michigan.
Yeah.
I think
Big Ten's year, maybe.
Yeah, I think it could be. I like Michigan, even though they lost, I forget the guard's name, but they lost one of their depth pieces, which kind of changes your rotation later in the games a lot. But I think they're really good. I think any of the one or two seeds are, you could make a case for them.
Feels wide open compared to maybe the past couple of years.
It does. It really does. But there's some. The one more thing before we go is to talk about the NBA draft. This might be the best top 11, 12, something like
well,
that.
This is good. The Bulls could use some fresh talent, Tom.
That I've ever seen.
Yes.
I was talking to former Governor Pat Quinn this morning, the big basketball guy. And we think this could be the best draft maybe ever.
This is good.
At the top.
This
the
is
top
good
of
for
the
our
draft.
Bulls.
Yeah.
Tom.
Yeah. There's a lot of talent. There's a. Hey!
Another swig of the beer, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Doerr. Since you've got great stories, you're welcome back on the show anytime. Mary's got to check on weather and traffic. We come back and Steve Trout joins us. I love every piece of audio we air from Harry Carey. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Trout is seated to my right. Did I almost say seated? My God. Steve and I were talking fishing today because he was on with Dale. How many years ago was that?
About 4 or 5 years
yeah.
ago.
But seated to his right, oh my gosh, is it? Is it Sid Finch?
It is.
The greatest hoax in baseball?
In person.
In person, which is really shocking because I know the story of Sid Finch. And when Sid Finch requested a parking spot today, I was like, what? We know this is a hoax, right? So for the WGN listeners who weren't in on the hoax back on April 1st, many, many years ago. How many years ago was it?
It was 1985.
Okay, so. It's been a while. Tell everybody the biggest hoax ever in baseball.
It's about a mythical Mets pitcher, but he's sitting with you. 168-mile-an-hour fastball. Pitches with one shoe on, one barefoot, Tibetan food bowl and rug, the creation of George Plimpton. So Lane Stewart was a photographer. I'm Joe Burton. I've taught art out in Oak Park, so we got connected to do the story for Sports Illustrated. Talked our way into so many different scenarios that Plimpton went back to write more of a story because he had the visuals to work with.
I'll tell you what, I ran it past my husband, who's a diehard baseball fan, and he said, he's a farmer. And he said, when other farmers were talking about it, he said, no, there's not somebody that can pitch 150 miles an hour or whatever. And he didn't realize that they were talking about a Sports Illustrated issue that was published on April 1st.
April 1st was the cover date. The magazine staff wasn't told that we were going to do that. So when the magazine hit the newsstands on that Monday, we even had Senator Moynihan calling up the magazine saying, is this real? And of course, the secretary said, we stand by everything we print. Of course, Senator, it's real.
So that was my question. How many people were actually in on it? And then what was, I don't like to call it the aftermath, but what was it like after? It's not like you could just go on Twitter and post, hey, it was a joke. You put it out in a magazine. How many people were in on this?
Well, we got into it because Nelson Doubleday, the Mets owner at the time, was a good friend of George Plimpton's. So that was our connection. But I think when we were shooting the story, just for 3 days, working with primarily the young players, they had just signed Gary Carter. I mean, in 85, the Cub fans would remember 84 was a pretty important year.
Yes.
In Cubs history. The Mets signed Carter. So when I was called to be told, do you want to be Sid? I jumped at it because the Mets were the biggest competition at the time. So primarily we worked with Mel Stottlemyre. Davey Johnson was great, Bobby Valentine at the time. And you baseball fans, of course Mets fans, that 85 team was really pretty decent. Dwight Gooden was young, but Lenny Dykstra was on that team, Kevin Mitchell, Jesse Orosco. Those were the guys we goofed around with because they were all excited. Is this going to be in Sports Illustrated? Because we had no idea if it was going to be one little picture or a whole, what ended up being an 18-page spread.
The greatest hoax in baseball. And seated to my right is Steve Trout. You pitched for the Cubs and the White Sox, and you told me that Ted Williams taught you to fish.
Well, I met Ted on a fishing trip.
Yeah.
In Isla Mirada, and we had a lovely time, just my buddy and I. But I fished all over the world, and
your dad, I mean, great baseball player. And he recognized that you were a lefty?
Well, yeah. Thank goodness I was, because my six other brothers were all right-handed. But my dad and Ted were dear friends. My dad had struck him out with bases loaded, and it was the last out of the game, and went up to Ted to ask him to sign the strikeout ball. And Ted said, if you're crazy enough to ask me to sign that ball, I'll sign it. But 3 weeks later, same situation. Ted this time hit it over the fence for a home run and said, Dizzy, I'll sign that too if you can find it.
Tell me about those memories that you still lean back into when you were with the Cubs.
Oh.
Or Harry.
The Harry story. Let's talk about a Harry story.
Yeah, let's do the Harry story.
It goes to the South Side White Sox. I'm doing the interview with Harry in between the doubleheader of Disco Demolition.
Oh, wow.
Now, they're setting up the albums in center field. Steve Dahl's ready. Everybody's got the dynamite is set. The albums are piling up. And Harry and I are doing the interview I pitched the day before. And as Steve Dahl got closer to where Harry and I were conducting the interview, Steve had two very lovely-looking ladies next to him in bathing suits. So, as I was just about to answer the question, Harry said, Steve, I got to go and interview Mr. Dahl. And that interview was, his eyes were focused. So, now, Harry had his priorities together.
I love it. Tell me about Loosey Goosey, your book.
Loosey Goosey is one of my baseball books for kids. And it's about a father coaching a son and how the son deals with some anxiety when the father's there, you know, hanging on the fence, yelling, come on, you hit the ball, Bobby, hit the ball. And the coach sees that the son is, you know, is uptight when dad is there. But in practices, he's not. So the coach then helps the father become a little less living through him vicariously. And it's a great story about how the coach helps Mr. Nelson has become a much better father to coach his son. So
lovely.
Yeah.
Always great to talk to you. Let's go fishing, okay?
Okay, let's get some trout.
And you're the only man who could get Sid Finch here, so thank you for that. Really loved it. Lovely to have both of you. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Randy Wells joins us at Harry Carey's for the toast to Harry Carey. Randy, thank you for coming out again. Oh, wait, let me turn on your mic.
Oh, I have red, sorry. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Kevin has a sports click. Of course, we're going to have you weigh in on that as well. It's sponsored by Joint Relief Institute, helping you stay in the game. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. What do you have, Kev?
What are your expectations for the 2026 Chicago Cubs? You can vote every day on the sports click at WGNradio.com. Randy, since you're here, we normally go around the horn, have a few different options, World Series, NL Pennant, deep playoff run. How you feeling about the 2026 Chicago Cubs?
I mean, it's the day before opening day, right? Everybody's optimistic.
There we go.
It's, you know, everybody's betting on them right now, right? But you know, I think they've done a good job.
It's the Dodgers, and then it's everybody chasing the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's played out. It's tired.
Tired.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You're done with the Dodgers' dominance. It's the Cubs' time.
Dodgers are over.
No,
it's, I think they've done a good job, right? They lock up a key piece in PCA. I think maybe you go after another one like Nico. I think you got some good young arms, and you maybe possibly go after a veteran arm at the break and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
Happy birthday to PCA. He's 24 today.
And $115 million richer.
Yes.
That's a deal, by the way, Randy, that just it made a lot of sense for the Cubs. Obviously makes sense for Pete Crow Armstrong, who kind of had he had an amazing first half, kind of a slow second half, but he really is already become the face of the franchise. I think it's safe to say that. He's a full-blown superstar competing in the World Baseball Classic. Definitely hits the younger crowd, too. Such an exciting player, the Cubs, and they've locked him up now for a good 6-7 years to come.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want to do, right? I mean, puts fans in the seats, and, I think, you look at just spring training alone, like he was, kind of got that superstar treatment, and people just want a piece of him. I think locking him up puts his mind at ease, puts his body at ease, and lets him kind of focus on baseball and see what he can really do.
26% of the vote went to an NL pennant, 23% said a deep playoff run, and 17% said a World Series championship.
Ooh, that's really optimistic, but I'll take it.
I'll take it too. Randy, I wanted to ask you about the robot umps, the automated ball strike system, and some of the talk in spring training I thought was interesting. Because it's only the pitcher, the catcher, or the hitter can challenge a call. And some teams are kind of sorting through that because all the pitchers are always thinking they threw a strike, no matter what the ump called, right? So they're thinking, okay, well, maybe we'll limit the catcher to signal the challenge because we don't want pitchers who can be very passionate on days they're starting or pitching. How do you think the whole operation is going to look with the robot umps this year? And are you in favor of it?
So that's a tough question. So I've always been a fan of the human error aspect. When I played and guys before me and before that, it's, you get different umpires have different strike zones, right? Different pitchers pitch different strengths, different umps on different days kind of determine, how the game went. I was always a fan of that. At the same time, though, as a pitcher, when you think you threw a strike and you got the opportunity to challenge it, why not? I think it's going to be good. I think there's going to be some kinks to work out, and hopefully it goes good and it helps the game in a positive manner. I think the pitch clock has been great. I think some of the things that they've started to implement have been beneficiaries. So hopefully this is just another one of those.
Hey, did you see the last game, the last pitch of the World Baseball Classic?
I did.
It was a bad call. USA wins, but it was a bad call. And that's when people go, maybe we need to take the human element out of it.
Yeah. I was a pitcher, so.
I know. You're like, it's always great to catch up with you. Randy and I bonded over country music a long time ago. He's still involved in hanging out with people like Jamie Johnson, and my gosh, you're friends with a lot of folks in that sphere, and it's good to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Cubs, you didn't really answer his question, like, do we win the pennant this year, or how far do we go?
I definitely think it's going to be a playoff
okay.
appearance.
Okay.
Alex Bregman, I know, last point, fans really excited about the Bregman signing. What does he bring to the table? Because they talk about Bregman, the competitor, unlike many other players across the league.
So I had the honor of going back to the Cubs convention this year and seeing the amount of people that showed up and the excitement that was surrounded in that hotel just by those few signings. But I think Bregman, most importantly, he brings that level of leadership that's always important in the clubhouse. You look back at 2016, there was a lot of good players and a lot of guys that played key roles in that championship.
A lot of leaders in that clubhouse,
but
too.
There was a lot of leaders. You look at John Lackey, John Lester, Jake Arrieta. Right now on a Cubs team that's kind of lacking that Rizzo, those leaders, I think Bregman is the first step in bringing those guys in. And then ultimately what happens in the game of baseball is guys like Bregman teach the game to guys like PCA and Nico. And when it's their time, they pass that on. That's kind of how the game kind of evolves. And that's how you get natural-born leaders, you know, kind of giving it, you know, to guys that are ready to be leaders but might not have the, you know, I guess, with lack of better words, the being ready to do it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the 16. I was, you know, covered a lot of those games, and you could feel the presence of, it was Lackey, Lester, and Arrieta all next to each other in the clubhouse. And then the other side, you had, like, the Rizzo and Chris Bryant, who were younger but were still kind of leaders of that team, but they really had the rock of those three veteran pitchers. You felt their presence in the clubhouse.
Right, but, you know, this
it's
team...
It's been 10 years already, Randy. Can
team,
you believe it?
Yeah, true. But this team this year, though, has a lot of those qualities. You know, Rizzo might not have been ready, but right. He was right there.
Yeah.
And then guys like Lester and Lackey and David Ross, you know, took him over the hump. And then Rizzo did a great job the rest of his career doing the same thing, kind of taking those things you learn. And so basically, hopefully, you know, this Bregman signing and then a lot of the guys that have been here, the PCAs, the Ian Happs. People don't talk about Ian Happ enough. Ian Happ is right there doing those same things. So I think they're right there, and they're going in the right direction.
Ladies and gentlemen, former Chicago Cubs pitcher Randy Wells, Steve Trout is in the house, Alderman Brian Hopkins, Ryan Dempster, John Williams is walking around. It's all happening at Harry Carey's on Navy Pier. The toast is at 5:30. We expect to see you here. And John Williams,
woo!
My gosh, it's
yay!
Good to see you. And in between us, Abraham Lincoln. And I got to tell you, Fritz, you play the part very well.
Well, thank you. I tried.
John Williams, you're used to presidents, right? You usually hang out with Thomas Jefferson.
And Teddy Roosevelt. Yeah,
yeah.
Who actually share Mount Rushmore with this guy, so it's all good company.
Absolutely. I want to know, before we get to Abraham, do you have Harry Carey stories?
I do not. I think everybody does, but I also have said that Harry Carey's the kind of guy who, everywhere he went, that person had a story. But for Harry, I think we were all just a sea of faces and, you know, selfies and autographs and pictures and stuff like that. So I was in the room with him. I introduced him at some events. Harry doesn't remember me. You know, I was thinking, though, on my way over here, Lisa, I went by a young lady, and she had on a great big pair of
Harry Carey glasses.
But they were prescription glasses. They were real glasses. And I thought, how is it that Harry, who you would not think of as a fashionista, became a trendsetter for eyewear? Did he think, I'm going to be fashion forward and rock some big glasses and the whole world's going to follow, or not? And I don't know that anybody's ever explained how it was that he came to wearing those glasses. And did he know that he was going to create a fashion trend?
Well, Grant DePorter just sat down in front of us. I'm sure he can fill us in on that story at some point. If anybody knows, it's Grant.
So, President Lincoln, tell me about baseball back in your day.
Well, actually, there was a bit of a history. Lincoln played baseball. It wasn't called baseball. It was called town ball. Mm. They're starting to call it baseball. But and it goes back hundreds of years before, and it was called rounds. So some of the rules were different. The batter was called the striker, and you could try as many times as you want But if the umpire thought you were not being sincere and trying to delay the game for some reason, he could just call you out for any reason. There are all kinds of things, you know. They had something called plugging. So you could throw the ball, and if you hit the runner, he was out. So we play it across the street from the Lincoln home in the summer. I'll be doing that actually this coming Saturday with the boy that plays Tad. And the kids love it, because as soon as somebody catches the ball, we toss it at them. It's like keep away, you know, and the kids are going, ah, you know. It's fun. It's really fun.
Dodgeball and baseball all in one.
All in one.
And where will you be on Saturday?
At the Lincoln home. I live in Springfield, and I work for the city. We have a program in the summer and the spring and the fall and around the holidays called History Comes Alive, and we do all kinds of first-person stuff. It's a gas. We have a lot of fun.
Have you been to the Lincoln Museum down there or the center? It is one of the best facilities in the state. We are so used to the great museum campus we have here. But what they have in Springfield now is amazing. It is... You'll just cry at some of the exhibits. It's really amazing.
It is.
And Route 66,
right through
there.
Goes right
through. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right through there.
Yeah.
And you were here for the unveiling of the Route 66 sign?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll get people from all over the world who come, and they ship their motorcycles over, or they rent them here, and they want to do the whole thing, and they come through Springfield to see Lincoln, so I, you know.
So you have a gig.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's a lot
Can we
of
go
fun.
Back to baseball? You're first baseman probably then, huh? You look like a first baseman.
I do, huh?
Yeah, well, you'd be a good target to throw the ball to.
I would be a good target, yeah. I could catch the high ones.
Did they have the same positions, though? Did they play first, second, and third back when they were doing
the
rounders?
They did, yeah. But shortstop could go all over the place. And so
can't do that
few,
anymore.
Yeah. And the thrower, we would call the pitcher, has to cross his legs in a certain way, and all the pitches were underhand. So nothing like now, you know.
No kidding, yeah.
Well, it's very lovely that you would
and no
spend
gloves.
Some...
They didn't have gloves, and the balls were softer. More like a softball today.
Did you know he would know all of this stuff?
I did not know that. I was hoping that he was, you know, ready to portray Abraham Lincoln since he looks the part. And
oh my God, does he look the part?
He really does. And you will see pictures on WGNradio.com. In fact, if you go to the website, you will see what's going on. But very nice to meet you, Fritz. Fritz Klein, right?
Yes, yes.
Anybody wants to hire you to portray Lincoln, you're the guy.
I am.
Very nice to meet you. We're at Harry Carey's. It all started at 5 this morning with a sign dedication for Route 66. How much of the Route 66 route have you taken, John Williams?
Well, it goes through Pontiac, right, and then down to Springfield, and then what happens after Springfield?
St. Louis.
St. Louis, and then you got to hang a right at some point, right?
You go all the way through Missouri to get
Missouri.
To Oklahoma.
So I've done it all the way to St. Louis,
nice.
But I have not gone any further west than that. Have you?
No, just bits and pieces. I mean, I lived out west, I did radio out there, so bits and pieces here and there, but I really do want to do the whole Route 66 at some point.
Does it go by Route 66 the whole way, or does it change depending on the town you're in, you know?
It kind of changes.
It's every now and then maybe the sign will change, but you can still do the original route.
Yes.
And do you say route or route?
It's definitely Route 66.
Yeah.
It's where I get my kicks, John.
Yes, we did play the song today. We did play.
Yeah. News is coming up next. We have so many WGN fans and Harry Carey fans. We are live at Navy Pier for the Toast to Harry Carey that happens at 5:30. So the toast is going to be hosted by Ron Kittle, who is currently out on the pier smoking a cigar because it's beautiful. Ryan Dempster is here. Tom Doerr is here. Andre Dawson, the Hawk, is going to be here. You're going to hear him all on the radio. But right now, one of our favorite actors, Chicago's own Bob Odenkirk, lifelong Cubs fan. How are you today, Bob?
I'm great. The first time I saw Harry or heard him was at the White Sox.
Oh,
my grandfather grew up four blocks from Comiskey, Old Comiskey. He was a Sox fan, but he became a Cubs fan, my grandpa. And we sat right underneath Harry's booth. And as a 10-year-old, I was delighted by his jovial energy and his net that he dropped down with people could get their rosters signed.
Yeah, yeah. And did you get that roster signed?
I did not. I wish I had. But we sat right next to the net. I don't know why my grandpa, you know, my grandpa was pretty serious about keeping his scorecard. He kept the scorecard through the whole game. And so I think he probably didn't want to have it go away for, 25 minutes or whatever it took for him to sign all that stuff.
So you've signed the seventh inning stretch several times at Wrigley. Last August was the last time wearing the late, great Ryan Sandberg's jersey. So you saw Harry with the Sox. You saw Harry with the Cubs. He was magic, right?
He was absolutely magic. He was born to do that job, and that's something you see occasionally in showbiz or in the world, right? Somebody who just was just born to do it. And as I said, my grandpa switched allegiances from the White Sox to the Cubs. I think it was because the Cubs signal came in better on the TV. not to mention, if you're retired, a game every day at 1:20 is awesome.
That's why you could set the clock by it.
That's right. So he followed Harry, essentially, when Harry left the Sox. My grandpa followed to the WGN, was like 79 or so, 80.
Bob Odenkirk is with us, Chicago's own, one of our favorite actors. And where were you during the 2016 World Series?
I was at doing Better Call Saul. I was in Albuquerque, and I was very dismayed. I had to work at 5 a.m. the next day, and the Cubs were struggling. And I'm going to be honest with you, I went to bed. I had to get up the next day at 5:30, and then my phone rang, and it was my brother, and he said, "Get on the TV, get back to the TV." And I did, and I caught the end of the game, and it was such a thing that my mother, who did not care about sports at all, only cared about the Catholic Church, was completely calling me to tell me how great it was that the Cubs won. So I don't know if she felt it was divine intervention or proof, but might have been. But it was everyone in my family. I was shocked at the depth of the joy that the Cubs win brought to us in Chicago.
And I'm sure your sweet mother was offering up a bunch of Hail Marys to make sure that happened.
Oh, she was. I can't believe she even knew. And she was so happy. She was so happy. And if you saw that parade, there was something about that victory parade that struck me, which was that the fans assembled were about 30 people deep on either side, all the way, the whole way. It wasn't just, 10 people. It was like 30 deep. And then, of course, people like my mom and my brother, who's a chemist, who went on to write for The Simpsons, for him to care, he doesn't care about sports. Everybody was part of that, felt a part of it. Everybody was rejuvenated and delighted and happy. And it was just one of the great moments in our city.
Absolutely. Thank you for being a part of this moment, the toast to Harry Carey today. It's the 28th annual, and we're so thankful that you took the time to call the show.
Thanks for including me.
Always, Chicago's own Bob Odenkirk on 720 WGN. Coming up next, Ryan Dempster is going to join us on the air. God knows we all love Bob Odenkirk. Ron Kittle, I'm telling you what, one of my favorite White Sox player ever, who doomed my first pitch out at the game one day. I love you because you always have the best stories. Welcome to the show, Ron. I hear you've been sitting out on the pier smoking a stogie.
And you ratted on me because I got a text that said, you're having a cigar outside.
did the security come up?
No, I'm bigger than the security.
I figured. I'm like, he has no worries. He's Ron Kittle. How are you doing, by the way?
I'm doing fine. Glad to be here. It's always an event for Grant, and love being part of it.
Yeah, so you've been here since what time this morning?
I walked over here at 3:45 this morning, and I've been here ever since.
Did you hear Ryan Dempster do his Harry Carey impersonation on the pier?
I've heard that 20 some times.
You're tired of it?
No. We talked baseball, Cubs and Sox earlier when we had lunch, and he's a great guy.
So what do you think the Cubs are going to do this year?
I don't care.
Sure you do. You're in your man shed building your benches out of baseball bats. I know you're still tuned in and watching not only the Sox but the Cubs, too.
I tell you what I do. I watch ESPN on my phone. I just check the score. I do not watch baseball because when I watch it, I micromanage it. And it gives me a headache when I got to manage Sox or a Cubs game. But, no, I'm a fan of Chicago teams.
Yeah.
And my favorite team is always the one that has their logo on my paycheck, Chicago White Sox. And so that's how it goes.
Absolutely. How many games will you be attending this year down there?
I do about two every homestand when they're in town. And I'm getting ready to go to Miami, see their team down there. But I'm really going down there to see Nick Perdomo, my cigar guy, on my free morning.
He'll roll you a few?
Oh, no, they got like 6 billion of them in his shop. So I'll come out with a suitcase full.
I can't let you be here without, you know, since we had close to 100 Harleys rolling up on Navy Pier today for the designation of Route 66. Did you ride here today?
I did not. Grant asked me to, but I said in March you could have a blizzard out there.
Yeah, but you've been known to ride naked.
Yeah, but that was in the summer. You know, there's always the 75 degrees better than 38.
And what did you and Dempster talk about when it came to the teams at lunch?
He asked me what I thought about the White Sox, and I said they got rid of a lazy person, and they got a bunch of young kids who got talent who play hard, and they're not afraid to get dirty. So if they're giving it 100% every single game, you should be pleased with the team.
Is it a different game now because of NIL and when people actually make it to the big league, they're more concerned with their brand than they are with being the best teammate ever?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I think they spend more time on their phone than they do in the practice field. And it kind of irritates me. But, you know, when I started, I was making $31,000 a year.
Wow.
Minimum salary now is, I think, $790,000.
Piss you off?
I would wear an ugly dress with size 14 high heels the rest of my life for that kind of money.
I know. And you played just as hard. Everything has changed so much. Signing PCA for what, $110 million perhaps?
Yes.
Is that it, Kevin?
Yeah, 6 years, $115 million for Pete Crow Armstrong.
Oh, my God. I mean...
And you're in your man shed making baseball benches.
Yeah, trying to sell something for $50.
Those benches are awesome, by the way. I know you said you aren't watching baseball, but did you follow the World Baseball Classic at all? It just brought so much momentum leading into the regular season. What do you make of the international competition in baseball?
You know, I'm not a fan of it, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I think MLB took out like a multi-billion dollar insurance for these players to get hurt. And I know it would be an honor to get picked to play, but if you got hurt and you're upsetting your home team that you're on and you're not playing, I got mixed emotions about that.
Well, both teams in town have players starting the season on the IL because they were injured in the World Baseball Classic. Seiya Suzuki with a knee injury, Kyle Teal on the south side. It was fun to watch, though, Ron, if you missed it.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't obviously say this, but I probably have more TVs at my house than they have in here. And the only thing I watch is Life Below Zero. Teams in Alaska, you know, when they live out there. That's all I do.
And that's
only on a rerun. So.
you've got something sparkly on your left hand there.
Yeah, this is, and I think I told the story. So I worked for the White Sox during the World Series year, and they gave me a watch. It said Ron Kittle, World Series. It was custom made, and I couldn't get it clipped, you know, clasped. So I put it on eBay and sold it for my charity for $1,500. And so everybody would write Jerry Reinsdorf because how come Kitty never wears his ring? And Jerry finally came, he goes, they want to know why you don't wear your damn ring. I said, I never got one. So 12 years later, we were having dinner, and Jerry stands up, and he goes, you know, sometimes there's I can't remember the word. It says that you got to make good. And he walked over and he handed me the ring. And he goes, you know, you got the most expensive one because it's gold's more expensive, diamonds more expensive than your big fat finger.
And how hard is it for him to sell the team?
He loves baseball. He really does. He's got a passion for it. You know, he's 90 years old. I had dinner with him just recently in Arizona, and he walked up to me and goes, you know, you need to come out of your shell a little bit so people can interview you. You know?
Have you had a chance to meet with the owners in waiting yet?
Yeah.
The Ishbia family?
Yeah, he was up at the ballpark, and we were walking out of Jerry's suite, and I said, don't forget, Harold Baines, Ron Kittle, lifetime contracts.
You're right.
And we walked out the door.
And that contract is to be like a Goodwill ambassador, or what exactly is your role?
Well, I'm an ambassador. Shake hands, kiss babies. I get to go on trips with our sponsors and premium seat people who renew their contracts for over 5 years. And I shake hands, kiss babies, and tell them, because not many people can talk to anybody.
And you're that guy that can.
And
we did a Mexico trip when we had the White Sox on our radio station.
Yeah.
Ron
I still
was
remember that.
Hanging out, smoking cigars with all these Sox fans down. It was great.
You know, and they take pictures and they still remember that. Yeah. I make everybody, and that's what, this is Ron Kittle. I make everybody feel good.
You do.
From a garbage man all the way to the top. And, you know, I got to get back. When she threw out the first pitch, it was so pathetic.
It was so bad.
I mean, I felt sorry for her. I was crying inside.
He was the last person I saw before I went out on the field at Sox Park. And I remember the dancing farmer saying, don't release it late. If you release it late, it's going in the dirt. And Kittle says something just like, yeah, you're going to mess it up. And I walked out there, and I didn't think I would be so nervous. And I had practiced all summer. I released it late.
Yeah, but you were throwing eggs all summer.
I think it was Chris Sales, wasn't it? He had to, yeah, like, run out and pick up this dribbling ball.
Oh, it was funny. No, I mean, yours is not bad. There's probably 50 worse. I've seen him throw it into the dugout.
Oh, Jesus.
And I also saw one of the ladies that worked at Sox Park. She was an honored guest. She worked at this park, and she rifled the ball and hit the cameraman who was taking her picture, and he was to the left, not even close to the mound.
Oh, my God. Well, next time, we need you to host a trip for us, because there's no more authentic person. There's no Ron Kittle on, Ron Kittle off. This is Ron Kittle, true to himself every moment of the way, and we're always excited that you're a part of the Toast.
Well, I'm glad to be here. You know, if you're friends with Grant DePorter and you don't like this man, you got a problem.
Right.
I mean, love him like a brother, and if he wants me to do something, I'll be there. I think I've only missed two Toasts out of all of these, and one I was out of the country, and another one I think I was doing something for the White Sox. And they pay me, so I got to do those first.
He will be here for the official Toast at 5:30. We hope that you'll join us. It's Harry Carey's Navy Pier. The news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Richard Roper, who is seated next to me. How many of these Toasts have you done?
Except for the two-year suspension for PEDs, which I'm still appealing, I think pretty much all of them.
Yeah, so, yeah. Oh, my gosh. The story's coming out of Kittle's mouth.
Oh, my gosh, the best.
I know, and it's just fun. We're going to have Andre Dawson on before 6 o'clock. The official Toast will take place. Ryan Dempster and Richard Roper, who joined us last year, and all I could think after the show was, I want Richard Roper on my show all the time. And then the wise one, Bob Surratt, got the phone call in first, and I found out via email.
Yeah, you know, Bob moves quickly, although sometimes it's through older media, because he sent me an email after that, Lisa, and he said, you know, I've been calling you for 3 days, and you're not responding. And I said, what number are you calling? And he goes, like, VI96403 exchange. And I said, you know, that's my landline. That was the number I put down when I was in kindergarten, when you had to know your phone number and address. When I lived at 15222 Dorchester in Dalton. And I don't live there anymore, so nobody go by there. But, yeah, then eventually I did hear from him on CompuServe on the chat room. And I friended him on MySpace, and then we finally got together.
I love that. You need to follow Richard, because he is still true to who he is as a film critic. And when you follow him on social media, you catch up with the latest of everything that's happening.
I try. I try. And, you know, most of the people are actually nice. And the other people,
you
know, there's a thing called the mute button. I use it for Kevin Powell a lot once in a while.
I like to chirp Rich every now and then. I'm like, hey, are you a Cubs fan or a Sox fan,
like,
Richard Roper?
You know, had a good run. Here's my fourth favorite brisket. I'm like, settle down, Kev. I'm busy right now. I'll get back to you.
And what are you? Are you a Cubs fan?
Oh, he's a Sox fan. He's one of the biggest Sox fans I know.
You know, at least I am, but I tell you, you know, because I always get asked this question. I grew up in Dalton, you know, and so the north side to me was Comiskey Park when we'd go from 156th in Maryland to 35th in Shields. But I'm not a Cub hater. I was very happy for all of my friends who are Cubs fans and relatives in 2016. And I'm a huge baseball fan. And you have to be if you're a White Sox fan. It's like when you're applying to college. You have to have a safety school. Or you know, because there are years when recently, I think, Kev, what did the Sox win? 12 games a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it was around 12. They got up to 60 last year.
Yeah,
so.
You know, there was the famous scene in Moneyball where they show the graphic of all the W's that the Athletics were getting on that famous winning streak. And I duplicated that with all the L's the White Sox were getting. Remember, they went in almost an entire month without winning a game.
They did go an entire month.
So I'm a baseball fan. You know, I mean, the Andre Dawson, that's so cool. You know, I just love to watch. Watch the game. I'm a big fan of the game. Being a Sox fan has its ups and downs. And right now, we're like, we can maybe win 70 games, which is, Kev, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, it is kind of sad. It's another rebuild we're sitting through with the Chicago White Sox. Opening day, though, Rich, is always exciting. What does Richard Roper do for opening day? Are you hanging at Harry Carey's? Are you grilling some hot dogs? What are you doing tomorrow, Rich?
You know, we started Holy Name, usually. Spend about an hour there. First of all, I have to make sure that the walls don't collapse when I come in. And, you know, sidebar, Lisa, I don't know if you know this. So I grew up in Dalton, right?
Yes.
And the Pope is from Dalton.
Right there,
isn't
the
that
house.
Amazing?
Yeah.
Rich struck him out when he was third grade, right?
Little League. So when the Pope, when it was announced that the Pope was from Dalton, now, I'm really good friends with Jane Lynch. Everybody knows her from Glee and everything. We grew up together, so she's from Dalton. So when the Pope was elected, I sent her a text saying, we just went down a notch on Wikipedia, people from Dalton. It's Pope Leo, Jane Lynch, and the movie guy. But Kev mentions that. So I sent out a tweet saying, I struck out the Pope in Little League, and he cursed me, and now I'm in big trouble because he's the Pope. It was a joke. I didn't really strike out.
I would take it as such.
And I started getting media inquiries, CNN, the New York Times, the Little League Baseball Association. We'd love to hear it. And I go, first of all, he's 10 years older than me. How dare you? And also, how would I remember that? You know. And I still hear people saying, so you grew up with the Pope. And I go, well, we grew up four blocks apart from each other, but when I was in Little League, he was in the seminary. You know, he was ahead of me. Bob. We called him Bob back in the day.
It is so cool, though. And all the fans who are showing up to the Vatican with their Sox hats, and he loves Aurelio's pizza, and it's amazing. It's so much fun for, I think, Chicagoans and obviously White Sox fans, too.
You really dodged a bullet when Tiffany Henyard was no longer mayor when it was discovered the Pope's house was in Dalton.
You know, it was like the scene in Animal House where you have the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. That should have been the new welcome to Dalton sign when you came off Sibley Boulevard there off the expressway.
Richard Roper is with us. Of course, you hear him on Bob Surratt's show on every Thursday. He's going to hang out. We're going to head outside to the pier. We're going to get ready for the toast to Harry Carey. That happens just before 5:30, but everybody's out there. Ryan Dempster, Andre Dawson, Tom Doerr, Ron Kittle, Randy Wells is still here. The place to be is Harry Carey's on Navy Pier.
Welcome back to the Toast to Harry Carey. Kevin Powell alongside Richard Roper. We're hanging out inside Harry Carey's at Navy Pier. Lisa Dent is making her way outside of the restaurant as we get set to toast to Harry Carey, the 28th annual worldwide Toast to Harry Carey. And sadly, Rich, they're taking the Budweisers away from us. We're going to need a couple cold ones up here at the table.
We're like the two guys at the wedding reception when they start putting the chairs upside down on the tables. And we're like, and they're like, listen, there's a joint down the block where you guys can get some coffee because that's what you need right now.
It's been a ton of fun. Great crew today. Rich, you're hanging out up until 6 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Again, Lisa and the whole crew making their way outside when we will toast Harry Carey. You've been to almost every single
almost
one of these.
I think I might have been to everyone. Might have missed one or two, Kev. And, you know, it's also great because we have a beautiful day. We haven't always had beautiful weather. And I know tomorrow for the Cubs opener, the forecast seemed to be like wavering between it's going to be great or it's going to be the end of the world.
Yes, right? That does seem to
one
be
of those two.
The forecast we are getting for tomorrow, with the Cubs at home against the Nationals, White Sox beginning on the road against the Brewers up in Milwaukee, which we don't have to worry about the weather up there. A little different here in Chicago.
Okay, you know, it's interesting.
Guys, there we go. There's Lisa. There is Lisa Dentz. Lisa has made her way outside as we get set for the toast. Lisa!
Oh, my God. You really have to be here. You got like 10, 15 minutes to get here. The Batmobile is something in itself you have to see. Of course, we've got Abraham Lincoln here. It all started this morning at 5 a.m. with a kickoff of a sign designation designating Navy Pier as the beginning of the trail for Route 66. Of course, it ends in Santa Monica. But nobody throws a party like Grant DePorter, and the party is on at Harry Carey's. And you guys, we've been inside. It is absolutely beautiful out here. The sun is shining. This should be opening day, but this is an event in itself. So we hope that you'll scoot over to the pier. Andre Dawson will be here, Ryan Dempster, Ron Kittle is still smoking a stogie somewhere here on the pier. That security does not want to approach him. And Randy Wells is hanging out. It's just, it's a party. And Richard, like you said, you've been here for every one of these except for two.
And I think, Lisa, the amazing thing is that Grant DePorter figures out a way to get Abraham Lincoln and the Batmobile in the same narrative. And then John Williams just told me, because he knows these things, Abraham Lincoln actually sketched the original design for the Batmobile. It's like, it's one of the little known historical facts about him. So there's a little bit of everything out there.
There's everything going on out here. We have Bulls fans. We have Lakers fans that are in attire. We have WGN fans. And it's just, it's a party that we need you to be a part of. It's a 28th annual Toast to Harry Carey. It looks like many people have Budweisers in their hands, as they should, because that's what we're doing for the toast. And we're kind of playing it by ear at this point, you know. We've got ball players out here that may or may not still be en route.
And shout out to Lisa, because Lisa, you've been back for less than 2 weeks. You made your way downtown. You're on the IL still, but you're playing ball today.
Yes.
You got the shoulder injury.
Job.
Shout out Lisa Dentz for driving the ship today.
Hey, I'm getting my picture taken right now in front of the Route 66 sign. And it's going to be a new designation for people who actually come to Navy Pier. And may I say, it's spring break at Navy Pier, so finding a parking place today was a challenge in itself. Use an Uber.
I was explaining to someone the details of this year's toast, and they were like, that's very Chicago. Grant DePorter working the alderman to get the start of Route 66 placed at Navy Pier. Grant gets it done again.
Absolutely. Grant DePorter, what do you think of the crowd?
It's wonderful. They couldn't beat the weather. Everyone's got to get set up now for the big moment, though.
You've got to give us another Harry Carey story as we're standing out here on the pier getting ready for the toast. Can we please just go back to the drinking diaries? Because, you know, the audience changes every few hours, Grant, and that is one of the most classic stories that only you can tell, because when I brought it up on the air, people were like, that's not true. He didn't keep diaries.
Oh, yeah, I totally kept diaries. And we counted his drinks one time. It was like 73,000 Budweisers, 300,000 alcoholic drinks. Doesn't mean Harry finished every drink, but he bought them. They were at bars, and it was just all over town. It was every city in the country, he was their guy.
Lisa, this was brought up earlier. I wonder if Grant knows the history of Harry's glasses, the iconic thick black framed glasses. Does Grant have any background on that?
Yeah, so Kevin wants to know, because John Williams brought this up, Harry Carey became an accidental fashion icon with the glasses. Do you know, was he aware of that? That was an intentional, we're pre-Instagram here, right?
Well, yeah, he kind of knew the bigger the glasses, it would make a statement. Yeah, but I did try them on once. The vision, it was horrible. It was 2,500 and one eye had astigmatism in it. You put them on, you get an instant headache.
It's too bad that he couldn't have trademarked those, or did he?
No, he did not. They're called the Goliath, and they didn't trademark it. But the Rosen Eye Care made them, and they did his glasses, the Pope's glasses, and Al Capone's glasses.
Holy smokes. And he liked to hang out with some of those mobsters, right?
Yeah, he had more than a few friends, yeah.
Friends. And among those friends, Elvis, Grant told us great stories today where Elvis was actually a fan of Harry Carey, and Harry didn't believe when he actually called him.
Right. Well, I didn't tell you the part two. So then Harry goes to Las Vegas, sees Elvis' name on the marquee, and thought maybe it was just a one-night thing where they spent, you know, together at Graceland. So he gave, like, the busboy, like, $20 and said, can you pass a note to Elvis in his dressing room? Elvis was so excited to hear Harry was in the audience, he ran out in his underwear in front of everybody and hugged Harry. Harry Carey! And they hung out in Las Vegas for 3 days.
Oh, my God. The women are probably following Harry Carey just to get closer to Elvis in his underwear.
I know. It would be quite a scene. This was before everyone had cameras on their phones.
Right, but the casinos had video. It might still exist. Who knows? But, yeah, it was a freedom that Harry enjoyed. Yes, he was in front of the camera, but every fan who was having a Budweiser with him didn't have a phone in their hand and taking pictures, and maybe things would have turned out differently, but instead we have this iconic character that everybody in Chicago thinks they can impersonate.
Right, right. And the one thing, when the diaries came out, I did get calls from Cook County judges and other things saying, I know I'm going to be in that diary. Please do not tell anybody. Erase my name.
It is time for the toast to Harry Carey at Harry Carey's on Navy Pier. We have Ron Kittle, Tom Doerr dressed as the Gemini Giant. Andre Dawson is coming in. And I think we're looking for Ryan Dempster, too. Are you guys ready to take it over? Are you going to take this microphone, one of you? Yeah, look at Kittle. Kittle's like, give me a microphone.
I'm ready. Am I ready?
Yeah, you're ready.
I'm not giving the toast, right? I'm just saying a few words.
What you are is live on the radio. This isn't just for these people. You're actually live on WGN right now. So don't drop a bad word like Bob Costas did.
Mm-hmm. Well, first I want to say something. I'm glad to have Grant DePorter back from last year, having some health issues. He's a rock star. Congratulations, Grant. I know this is your baby out here. You just throw me in here to make you feel good. You know, look positive out here. But we're here today to toast Harry Carey. Was it 28 years?
Yes.
28 years. I've only missed two, I believe, in the past because I was working or traveling. And I am so glad to be his friend, let alone I know Harry Carey. So he bought me my first dinner in the big leagues at Miller's Pub. And then the owner walked up to me and he said, Harry's never paid for anything his whole life. It's on me today. So and that was 1982 and September 5th, I think it was. And,
wow.
I don't know how you want to do this. You want to just?
I don't think that you've shared that story before, Kittle. And while you guys are figuring something out, let's say hi to Alderman Brian Hopkins. We're right here in your ward, right?
Hi, Lisa. We are. This is the home of all things Cubs, and I'm proud to represent the north side of Chicago.
Stand right here.
All right. The microphone is now in the hands of Ron Kittle, Tom Doerr, former Bulls announcer dressed as the Gemini Giant, Abraham Lincoln, better known as Fritz Klein, and Alderman Brian Hopkins all here.
And Ryan Dempster's fired. Where in the hell is he?
Andre, you coming in? Come on in. Andre Dawson, make room for him. Let's get you. Andre, how are you today?
Fine. Great. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. We're going to scoot you over here.
God bless you.
Yeah. All right. You guys, as you can tell, this is live radio. This is what I live for when there's just a little bit of chaos and so many people holding a live microphone. John Williams, you take over.
Why? I do not want to take over. This is your show. All right, everybody. So we're going to do a group pick, right? And Lisa Dent needs to be in the front and middle next to the Rocket Man. And pardon me, excuse us, mystery guest, sign in.
Good evening, everyone.
Andre Dawson, ladies and gentlemen, woo! And Abraham Lincoln and Grant DePorter and Lisa Dent. What a crazy show.
And Randy Wells is standing right behind you. Here is the toast to Harry Carey. We're taking the official photos. We hope that you're watching online, listening online. And, of course, photos at WGNradio.com. I need a Budweiser. Get up here, Grant.
Can I say something?
Thank you.
Hey, since we're live.
John.
What?
John. You got one.
Okay.
Thank you.
We want to say thank you for Harry Carey's staff first. They get overlooked a lot out here. They've been busting their fannies, serving you guys free drinks and meals. And I hope you left a tip for some of these people out here. I mean, that's important because that's their livelihood out here. But for 28 years, a toast to Harry Carey, who's important to not just the north side, the south side, and St. Louis. Wonderful man. Most people don't even know what he did for a living besides drink. And they used to have bets what inning he was going to fall out of the net. And it was up to $12,000 at one time. I know that for a fact because I was putting money in it. So all that.
I was too.
And so was Tommy. Yeah. And but he had a wonderful touch with everybody, and he was a great player. So a toast to Harry Carey. Cheers away, Harry. And it's absolutely a perfect day out here, except this morning it was like 26 degrees below. But we're glad everybody came out here.
This bud's for you.
This bud's for you.
So here's the deal. We're still waiting for a few more guests to show up. We're going to have to sing, Ron, at some point.
Well,
you know
I
that.
I don't sing nor dance.
Oh, Ron has rules. Ron has rules. Tom Dore, you'd be willing. No chance of singing or dancing?
If Kitty's not doing it, I'm not.
If Kitty's not doing it, Andre, we don't have any hope you're going to do it then, right?
No, I don't even sleep long because, you know, I want to make sure that I keep my eyes open as long as I can.
The great Andre Dawson is here. The Hawk will join us on the air after the toast. We're all assembled on Navy Pier, and it's a beautiful day.
You know, and one thing that Harry did, too, on the north side and south side, Ron was just referring to it, too. He made people happy. You know, if you were rooting for one team or the other, you knew that he was going to make you laugh, feel good. He was genuine. I just think, what I think about Harry Carey, I don't know what you think about, and it's a lot, but I think how happy he made people, right? Isn't that like the thing that united the city?
We actually had a woman whose husband caught a foul ball at the game. She was 7 months pregnant. Harry was calling the game. The limo pulls up. They drive away, and she's intent on chasing down that limo. She chased that limo for about 3 blocks. To some point, Harry says, stop. He rolls down the window, and he goes, whatever you need, lady. Whatever you need. If you're that pregnant and you're chasing me that far, whatever you need. That was a WGN listener sharing that story yesterday, and that's really just, it speaks to who he is as a person. And Kittle, you're also that person. You are who you are, whether you're on the field, off the field, half naked on a motorcycle, or actually building a bench out of baseball bats.
Cheers to Ron Kittle.
Hi, Ryan Dempster.
Oh, look at this. He's late. Now he's giving hugs.
Ryan Dempster just walked up.
I've been giving him hugs since 5 o'clock this morning, so...
You can't be here without doing it.
Yeah.
Nobody does it better. Give us the impersonation.
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for everybody for coming out all day long and being here again. Grant, we keep praising you, but it's true. We're keeping the legend of Harry Carey alive and well through stories and these get-togethers and this time and this toast. He bonded so many memories for so many people across this great country, just like Route 66 did. And it kind of makes sense that they go together. So let's all raise our glasses, our toast together.
Out of the words of a good friend of mine, it's opening day tonight, but the real opening day starts tomorrow as the Cubs are right there on the north side. Stop on by, have a cold one at my places, Murphy, Sheffield's, the Lodge, wherever you feel like going. I just want to say to 28 years of everybody showing up and having a good time in my honor, it's meant the world. Thank you very much. To Harry Carey, everybody! Cheers.
This is 720 WGN. It is a toast to Harry Carey on Navy Pier, and the party is still going. You know, honestly, everybody was waiting on Ryan Dempster to lead the whole thing, and they're like, he's stuck in traffic. Stuck in traffic? So we were doing a little tap dancing, but the size of the crowd out there is amazing. And to see Andre Dawson walk up, you guys, Richard, he wouldn't join the crowd. Like, he was just hanging back like everyone else, and everyone's like, Andre, you can go forward. You can, you know, so humble.
Very unassuming.
Yes,
you know, you guys had Bob Odenkirk on earlier, who I love, and Like, he could be in one of those action movies, Andre Dawson with Bob Odenkirk, where he would just stand in the background and wouldn't say anything, but you'd be like, I don't want to get on his bad side. And he's a lovely man, but it's just like, he a man of few words, which makes him even more dynamic in a strange way and more interesting.
Right. I mean, just his stature. And, there is. You're right. He's a comedic bit player without even having to say a word.
Exactly.
How great leading up to opening day.
And David Plyer is sitting next to us over here, too.
Hello, Lisa. You look fabulous.
Oh, thanks.
No, really.
It's so funny because they're handing me a microphone, my phone, and a beer, and I'm like, okay, I only have one hand that works.
What do you choose, really? What do you want to choose?
That's the beginning of every radio joke. Yeah. A host walks into a restaurant with a microphone and a beer.
And a beer,
That's how it used to be.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's true, too.
That's back right when Harry Carey could drink in the booth.
True.
Those were in the days that we could drink in the booth, honestly. Richard, you had to be around for those days.
Well, Lisa, you know, I always like to mention this, and folks know, of course, that Harry Carey was with the White Sox for quite a few years before he became a Cubs icon and blew up nationally. I always say that. But I remember as a kid, teenager, 12, 14 years old, Harry Carey would broadcast from the center field bleachers at Old Comiskey Park, and he'd just be at a table there with his shirt off, looking like one of the uncles in Godfather Part 2 in the flashback sequences, and the cups would just stack up next to him, and he had his fishnet out there in case someone hit. And Dick Allen once hit a home run to center field that Harry almost caught, so it wasn't only foul balls that he'd be trying to catch. But I remember going there as a kid and going, I don't know what exactly is going on here, but I can't wait to grow up.
And you know what's great about that is these days everybody wants to become that person. Well, if someone said, Harry, get a fishnet, wear these cool glasses, say, holy cow, you'll be a star, he'd be like, what? It just was in him.
Yes.
It was in him.
Yeah. He was viral without anybody knowing what that meant. And, the take me out to the ball game, it started at White Sox games when there would be 17 people underneath the booth there, right below the booth with him and Jimmy Pearsall, and he'd start singing, and then he'd drop the microphone down, and it'd be 20 people singing take me out to the ball game. And then it became this thing now that's global.
Right. And I literally took the microphone and went up to the crowd assembled. So those voices you heard singing were WGN fans, Harry Carey fans. Mm. Ryan Dempster, are you going to come over here and talk to us? Well, come on. Somebody's got to give up their seat.
I'll give up my seat.
No,
I'll go.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a microphone right
here.
We're going to hook you up. I'm interested in knowing the very first time that you thought you could impersonate Harry Carey.
I think one of the fun parts was for me, I grew up with two younger brothers, 3 and 5 years younger than me. And so it was kind of like dinner table conversation. Like maybe that afternoon we were lucky enough to watch a Cub game. And then my brother would be over there and be like, Ryan, pass the potatoes. And my mom's looking like, cause she didn't watch any of the games. My dad was at work. They had no idea kind of what we were talking about. You know?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and then it just evolved. And then you saw the comfort level. Like when Will Ferrell got out there, it was like, oh, people are doing this. And obviously I knew John and what he had done. And then coming here to Chicago. And the legend just, in my mind, continues to grow. Because I don't have those stories of that time with him. So I'm like developing even more and like constantly picking brains as to stuff he did.
Harry was in the Radio Hall of Fame, I think, as our third class back in 1990 when he got in. So that was, I mean, very, very early on when we were still inducting Jack Benny and some of those other people. Harry was on the top of the list.
And so everybody is still out there. If everybody knew that you were in here, Ryan Dempster, they'd all be in here. But to the far right is Kevin Powell, our sports anchor, Dave Plyer, Richard Roper. I'm Lisa. We're just happy you're here. And you've been here since what time this morning?
Yeah, I got here at 5:15. I left my house just before 5 this morning. And we had a great time with everything, just prepping for the toast. And then, you know, the Route 66 stuff. And the rededication of the spot of where it starts. It's been a long day. I went home to go take a nap, but it was like I meditated for 10 minutes.
You know, Ryan, the great thing about Grant DePorter is he can always figure out a way that history started at Harry Carey. So eventually we're going to find
out that
Apollo 9 actually took off from Navy Pier, not Cape Canaveral, and there'll be an astronaut.
Yeah. And originally, Harry was supposed to go on that. Yeah. But then he jumped out at the last second, landed in the lake, and that's how they started naming
Buzz it. Aldrin, and the rest is history. And he'll have something. He always knows how to tie it all together.
When you walked up, we couldn't get Andre Dawson to come out of the crowd. Like it was like, please come forward this way, this way. And he was the first person you ran up and hugged.
Oh, man, he is like one of my favorites ever. I was really lucky. Growing up in Canada and watching the Montreal Expos on the French channel. Yeah. So I got to watch Hawk and Tim Raines and these guys. And then when he goes to Chicago and all that, and then as a kid, that's like I'm 10 years old.
Right.
When he comes and wins an MVP here. And he was like that guy. And then what happened was his last years were with the Marlins. Well, I come up as a young rookie. I was kind of a workout guy. I loved to get in the gym every day.
Yeah.
Every day. And he would ride the bike. He always said to me, and I don't know if he's still does this, probably not with new knees, but maybe with new knees. He said, I ride the bike for the amount of minutes of my age every day.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he'd be in there, and then he's lifting, and he's jacked and shredded.
He looks intimidated. Great.
But he was so kind and nice, and I picked his brain on, you know, if I was struggling, how do I get out of this? And he would just continuously lift me up, always. Mm. You're going to be all right. Just keep working hard. Just keep working hard. Keep learning. You know, you should talk a little less. He told me, you know. Pretty fitting. You know, all these years later, I'm still doing it. But, he's the godfather. They got a great story about Hawk. So he's a special assistant with the Marlins, and we all wanted Barry Bonds' autograph. This is how badass of a man that Andre Dawson is. And we wanted autographs from Barry Bonds. He was hitting all these home runs. So we sent over dozens of baseballs, and we sent over jerseys and bats and all this stuff. Barry, would you sign? And everything came back with nothing on it. And we were like, oh, man, that sucks, you know. And Barry, message was, Barry's not signing. So then Kevin Millar, my co-host on Intentional Talk, goes up to Hawk and he goes, hey, we want Barry to sign some stuff. Can you get some stuff to sign him? And all of a sudden, he just kind of looks at Kevin. He shakes his head. He's like, yeah, I can do that. Just in that quiet tone.
Yeah.
And they sent everything back over. It all came back signed with two extra dozen baseballs, some extra bats. Wow. And I'm like, and we looked at him like, Hawk, you're the godfather. Yeah. Everybody's scared of you, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It was great. And that's respect. And I just respect him so much.
That is respect. And just the way he carries himself, like he's and just a person in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he appreciates the Cub fans and the baseball fans in the city of Chicago and what it gave him. You know, he took a chance to say, I'll sign a blank contract because I want to play there. And he will say, be the first to say that he's got paid more than money can ever give him from the experience of playing here and being a Cub.
The history of the Cubs, Ryan, basically endless. And you're a part of it, and you're embracing all of it, obviously. But when you're a part of it, I mean, what is that like as a player and being at Wrigley every day? The players always talk about Wrigley and what it means to them and just putting that uniform on. You've embraced all of that, too.
Yeah, I think it becomes very hard not to the longer you play here. One, as a visiting player, I made my first major league start here in 1998, June 1st, 1998. Sammy hit three home runs that day and then went on to win 20 that month. But I remember after the game, it was my first start, I called my parents. I said, I want to play for the Cubs. Like, it was so special, you know, and to be a ballpark in this neighborhood, you know, you're going to these different places. It's like, oh, a big bus ride, and then, you know, you got traffic, and it's maybe over here, and it's nice. But this was like in a neighborhood and all the bars. We didn't even, half the team didn't take the bus back afterwards. We're like, we just want to experience this. And then, you know, to come back years later and be a member of the team and then play and work my way back. And kind of like Chicago to me is kind of how I was, hardworking, blue collar, treat people nice. If you go out there and give everything you got, they will respect you and never boo you for it. And I just, I loved it. I embraced it, and I haven't left. And it's always going to be a big piece of who I am as a person, the relationships that I have here that I've known forever with people. It's forever in me. I'll forever be. If one day I move away, I'm going to be coming back here on vacation. It's just too good of a spot.
Kevin, talking about that back in the day, what do you think of Wrigley Field now? It's a different neighborhood than it was in the 90s, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, life's different, right? And a lot of things have changed. Like, you know, so many things are just bigger. Sometimes we think is better. It maybe necessarily always isn't. More. I like the nostalgia. I still do walk around and play bags with people or have a beer on a porch because that core of it is still there. With all the shiny buildings around and all the new improvements, those things are still happening around in the neighborhood. And I think, to me, every time I walk in there, whatever door I walk in, I can smell things that I normally smell, whether that's the hot dog vendor that's in that particular section or maybe somebody who couldn't make it to the men's room in time. You know, that happens. But I have these distinct, you know, areas, and it's just so – I never walk in and go, yeah, it's okay. I walk in every time. I did it today. Yeah. I ran across the street, and I'm like, just the smell of that. It's just special. It's different.
It's special to be here with you. Ryan Dempster here at Harry Carey's. It's the toast to Harry Carey on 720 WGN. It has been a day. It started at 5 a.m., and the party continues at Harry Carey's on Navy Pier. And as you've heard many, many of the people on the show today, just throwing so much love towards Grant DePorter because he puts on events and parties like no one else in this town. Richard Roper is to my right. Seated next to him is Ryan Dempster. And seated next to him is Andre Dawson, the Hawk. Andre, really lovely to see you. And I was blown away that you stood in the crowd like we had to literally pull you on stage to be a part of it. But as a Cubs fan, may I say, I'm glad that you stood strong on the Cub hat.
Oh, thank you. That was an incredible time in my career, very important time, because after 10 years, it was the only place I wanted to be. And I had to get creative in getting here, but, you know, that's all past history now. The fact of the matter is I got to, for 6 years, play where I wanted to play.
And you came in and said, you gave him a contract that was signed with no price on it, right?
Well, I gave him a blank contract. I figured it was the only way. It was during collusion, during the era of collusion. It was the only way I was going to be able to get here as a free agent. And it wasn't a monetary issue for me. It was the fact that you got to, you know, get creative as you can to get where you want to be. And I realized, you know, I was sticking my neck out. They could have very easily walked away and said, no, we're not negotiating with free agents. But I figured I couldn't come in with a monetary price as a free agent. So I just said, here's a blank contract. Pay me what you think I'm worth.
And what are you doing now? Tell everybody what you're up to.
You really want to know?
I do.
Well, I own a funeral home. Actually, I'm a part owner in another funeral home, but I own a funeral home. Who would have ever thought, right?
Right.
I was scared to death of dead people growing up. So I never envisioned that would be something I would be doing post-career. But it's sort of grown on me in a sense now because I look at it like it's, you know, another community service that's, you know, in dire need.
It's I think the way that we honor those who have passed is a tradition that is unique to this country, and the respect that is shown is of utmost importance, and I love that a man of integrity like you is involved in that business.
Well, I would have never thought. No one could have
That's amazing.
No one could have ever, you know, told me this is something that I would be doing post-career, but it took a minute for it to grow on me, and it's not what you're accustomed to during your career, the cheers and the ovations. It's the complete opposite. But like I said, it's something I'm, you know, all in now, and it's a need in the community that, you know, I perceive to have grasped at this particular time, and you know, I'm very comfortable with it.
Andre, that's just incredible because when you think, as Lisa mentioned, when you're running a funeral home, you're seeing people at the time where they're lost more than any other point in their lives. They're completely lost. They don't know what to do. And there are all these particulars and legalities you have to go through, but you also have to be comforting. So I salute you for doing that because you're the last memory these people are going to have of their loved ones is how they were treated by the funeral home.
Well, in you know, like you mentioned, you don't want to come across as having all of the answers. You want to be a good listener. The people are grieving, they're hurting, and you just want to provide the best services for them. So for me, it was something that I had to grasp and said, you know, I prayed on it. I said, you know, God, this is where I am at in my life at this particular time, and I know you got my back. You've always had my back, and I'm going to put my best foot forward and just follow your lead.
We are up against WGN News, Ryan. Tell me what you think of the man seated to your right.
Yeah, I said earlier before you're here, just all these things you hear about him, I think it's funny. As a kid, I grew up watching Andre play, and I had this admiration as a player that was, I didn't know the person. And then as the person I got to know and this relationship that we've had now had for going on almost 30 years, I don't really remember him much as a baseball player. I remember him way more as a human being, because that's overshadowed anything he ever did on a baseball field. How he treats people, the respect that he shows to so many people. You talk about a man of integrity, a man who's loyal, a true friend. And I pinch myself sometimes to sit here and think, man, this is a mentor, a friend, a tutor. I'm pretty lucky. And by the way, I think he's a little bit full of it, because he was putting pitchers to sleep for a long time before he became director of a funeral home.
And Andre, have you ever tired of his impersonation of Harry Carey?
No. He's almost perfect. He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Okay, give us the impersonation one last time.
Why, it's an honor to be up here with all of you guys tonight. And, you know, I know I'm not here in real life, but I'm here in spirit, and we got an undertaker who's making sure that spirit's staying alive. He's a legend. You're all great people. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the toast to Harry Carey on 720 WGN. Thank you so much. Andre Dawson, Ryan Dempster, Richard Roper.